You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
We thought the Giants were maybe done with tinkering with their roster a couple weeks ago, but it turns out they have surprised us and done a little tinkering just before pitchers and catchers are ready to report to spring training. Talk to Chris Haft about that. I'm Allison Futter. Chris, okay, so the Giants agreed to a deal with a Korean third baseman. His last name is Wong. That's where we're going with that. Tell us about the deal, where he fits in, and what the best-case scenario is for him making this club.
Allison, I think the best-case scenario for him initially would be maybe in a platoon role with Connor Golaski. Connor hits bats left-handed. Mr. Wong bats right-handed, and he's coming off his best year there in the Korean League. He hit 24, 26 home runs, and I don't know how much that power translates to the United States major leagues. But if he can be anything like Gong of Pittsburgh, they will have acquired somebody pretty darn valuable, somebody with a little pop there at third base. So I think that's what they're thinking and hoping, that they can kind of catch lightning in a bottle, to use one of Brian Sabian's sayings. They've done that before with various players, and I think they think they might have another one here.
So a little surprising to you that this all of a sudden came about. I mean, there didn't seem to be any kind of rumors or anything that they were sniffing around with him. Did this kind of come out of left field, so to speak?
Not many rumors. Right after the start, literally right after the start of the year, I think it was January 3rd even, the good and great John Paul Morosi, I think, tweeted that the Giants still had some interest in Wong. But that died down quickly. And usually and often when such rumors get floated, as well as I do, they're 2 or 3 weeks old. But nothing was said here for a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden this move was made. So apparently the Giants were serious about Wong and remained serious about him, and they know what they're doing. I mean, there are times I question the Giants' judgment, but usually they know what they're doing. So if they think he can maybe make an impact, I'm willing to keep an open mind and see if he can.
Okay, moving on to another deal they made. They signed Nick Hundley, catcher, to a one-year deal. I like this. He's an ideal backup catcher. Obviously, the San Francisco Giants are not looking for somebody to catch 140 games a year. Hundley has a lot of experience. He's 33 years old. I like this deal. Do you?
I really do. Yes, Al. So he knows the division, having played for San Diego all those years and Colorado for a couple years. So that's invaluable right there. If something were to happen to Buster Posey where he had to go be sidelined for a few weeks, Hundley could step in and do more than an adequate job. He actually hits well at AT&T Park. That's a nice bonus. And one of our colleagues was telling me about what a great guy he is. So the Giants have a reputation for having a good clubhouse, and Nick Hundley should add to that. So from all perspectives, I would have to say I applaud the deal.
Okay, and I want to talk just a little bit about Hall of Fame voting. It's a very interesting Hall of Fame, what do we call this, a Hall of Fame election cycle, possibly. Just the weeks leading up to the announcement, it looked like Bonds and Clemens, not only did they see a spike in support, they seem to be one and the same now as far as voters are either voting for both or voting for neither, and they don't seem to be going halfsies on anything. So it's very interesting to see how close their totals are. So I don't know. I mean, they've got, 4 or 5 years left on the ballot. I never thought that Bonds would get in, but it seems like voters, as they're clearing the electorate body, is clearing out of some of the older sports writers. Seems like they're getting more support. Do you think that Bonds is going to get elected eventually?
I think he will, Allison. He'll probably have to increase by about 5% a year to make it finally. But I think there'll be years where, especially in the immediate future, where he takes more of a quantum leap, 10-12% or whatever, and maybe gains induction here in 2 or 3 years. I will. Openly confess, I'm one of those people who did not vote for him in previous years, but then with all the acquittals and all the at least legally the evaporation of the cloud that hung over him regarding PEDs, he was not found guilty of any of that stuff. My reasoning was, well, I can't not vote for him because legally he did nothing wrong. He's guilty in the court of public opinion. We can, I think a lot of us know that, but I don't know if that's enough of a deterrent to vote for him. So I checked off his name. I checked off Roger Clemens' name before I sent in my ballot.
Yeah, I think it's. I think there's a couple different ways of thinking. Not sure I agree on that. He wasn't convicted of obstruction of justice, which doesn't mean that he didn't do anything. But yeah, okay. I mean, that's just totally subjective. Everybody has their own opinions. But I wonder, so there's another group of voters who decided to vote for him this year. I wonder, is there going to be the natural uptick of more voters jumping on? I sort of feel, this is a long way of saying, I sort of feel like everyone who is planning to vote for him has already voted for him, and that we're not going to see, more that are going to decide to vote for them next year. I feel like we may not see the 5% increase every year. Does that make any sense?
That makes total sense. And, of course, I can't predict what's going to happen.
Right, yes.
I can see, you make yourself clear, and I totally comprehend where you're coming from, and it just might happen that way. I don't know if it's predicting the Hall of Fame voting patterns now. I mean, once upon a time, you could almost, set your watch or whatever by the voting patterns. Now, I don't know if there's such a pattern anymore, because you've got, you can only vote for up to 10 guys, and it seems like there are any more now. There's 12 to 15 guys who deserve at least serious consideration every year. So, there's only so many spaces on your ballot, and do you vote for a DH like Edgar Martinez, or do you vote for relief pitchers like Trevor Hoffman? I'll admit, my perspectives as I get older, my perspectives change from year to year, just because I think my perspective of the game changes from year to year. I don't know if I'm necessarily wishy-washy. It's just that, it's just a human thing. Things change as you experience more and see more, and your views alter somewhat. So, I don't know what's going to happen with these. And I think it's built that way for a lot of voters. And so I don't know what's going to happen with a lot of these guys.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because there's no way to predict it. And with so many voters having so many different philosophies, it's not easy to really even adhere to a formula that might even make sense. But I never thought we'd see Bonds and Clemens in, and now I'm thinking they may just sneak in there in their, 8th, 9th, 10th year. It could very well happen. It'll be an interesting scene in Cooperstown if it does. The current Hall of Famers aren't real big fans of these guys.
Yeah, I've never spoken with any of them about it, but I've heard the talk,
Right.
Or the rumors or whatever. And so, yeah, there may be some reckoning coming here.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's going to be high attendance. But anyway, okay, we're getting way, way, way ahead of ourselves, so we'll cut it off there. Chris, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon. Pitchers and catchers are preparing to report to spring training, and of course the Diamondbacks pitchers and catchers will have the shortest distance to go from their home city to their spring training sites, which is always a fun time for Steve Gilbert and all of his friends out there. So let's catch up with Steve Gilbert. I'm Allison Footer. Steve, let's talk about the Diamondbacks. Not a lot going on with your team right now, but they did have a rookie development program recently, which, reading about it, it sounds very much like the Major League Baseball one that they hold in Virginia. It's in January. It's a really good time to sit and talk with the players, make sure that they understand what it takes to become a major leaguer on the field and off the field. So what can you tell us about what the Diamondbacks do, and does it mirror the bigger one from Major League Baseball?
So they just, they wanted to bring guys in that they felt like were closer to the big leagues, and there's only a certain number that each organization can send to the rookie development program for Major League Baseball. And a couple of the guys that had gone to the Major League Baseball one also came out to this one. And it was just a way for them to kind of get 10 of their prospects that could be in the big leagues as soon as this season into a smaller group where they could, they heard from some motivational speakers. One of them was the high school football coach whose team had won all those consecutive games, and they made the movie When the Game Stands Tall about him. Tony La Russa also spoke, kind of giving them an idea of, you know, his thoughts after having managed for so long in the big leagues. And so they got to do that. The position, they broke off into position groups where it was just, you know, one or two from each position that could get real hands-on instruction. And so it was just more of a way to kind of give them a taste of certain things and give them an idea of what's going to be expected, because most of these guys are coming to spring training as either non-roster invites or first-time 40-man roster guys.
So they really get a lot of, I mean, I think it's really interesting. It's very, very helpful. It's teaching them about dealing with media, dealing with, you know, some of the unsavory people that might want to come into your life, knowing who to trust, who not to trust. I mean, things like that, that we kind of take for granted, but at the same time, there's a lot that's thrown at these guys, and not everyone's a bonus baby, of course. Most players, when they sign for $1,000, and that's basically what they get per month to play baseball. But once they come into fame, fortune, I mean, there's just a lot to handle. And we don't really think about it in terms of that they may not know how to handle all that. So this probably, is that incorporated into this, where they really have, like, people that are chatting to them about that kind of stuff?
I think they have some of that, not probably to the same extent that they did at the Major League Baseball one.
Right.
They only had 3 days worth of time this time around, and I talked with Mike Bell, who's their, you know, vice president of player development. He said that they're going to look at next year maybe doing something a little longer, just to kind of spread it out and give maybe even some more players an opportunity to come in and hear some different things. So that's certainly part of the thinking behind it. And also, you know, there's some guys like Tyler Jones who, you know, they drafted in a Rule 5 draft. It's a good experience for him, he was saying, to come in and get a chance to actually meet some of his teammates. You know, people will be in spring training, as well as some of the major league staff that that otherwise he wouldn't get to see until spring training opens.
So, okay, let's look at more of what's going on the field as soon as the pitchers and catchers report. When you just look at overall the team, the Diamondbacks obviously had a disappointing year last year, somewhat having to do with injuries. Somewhat having to do with just guys that were supposed to be really good not being very good. We've had rehashed that enough, but what would you say would be like the strength of the team going into spring training, not necessarily opening day, strength of the team going into spring training?
You know, Allison, I think that the strength of this team is really its everyday position player core. They have some young, talented guys first off in Paul Goldschmidt. You also have A.J. Pollock, provided he's healthy, a guy with that maybe even has farther to grow than he showed in 2015, which was an outstanding season for him. Jake Lamb is starting to come into his own at third base. Brandon Drury is another young kid that they're excited about, maybe seeing some playing time at second base. You know, David Peralta, Chris Owings. I mean, you can kind of go on and on down the list. They have some pretty good depth and some pretty good players when it comes to everyday position players.
Okay, and finally, last topic. All 30 MLB.com reporters were asked to write a story about the best free agent signing in their club's history. And I know that you probably stayed up all night pondering this and trying to figure out, running through the all-time rosters for every season that the Diamondbacks have been around. Of course, I'm being very sarcastic. So, Randy Johnson, your bold pick for the best free agent signing in franchise history. And let me say one thing. So, at the time when Randy Johnson signed with the Diamondbacks, he had come off his 2-month season with the Houston Astros in 1998, and the Astros pretended that they were in a bidding war to try to retain him, knowing the entire time he had no intentions of re-signing, and he had every intention of signing with the Diamondbacks, which is exactly what happened. And I guess there was some criticism at the time from a public standpoint, because Randy was the elderly age of 35 at the time when he signed that, which seems a little silly now to think that there was a thought that maybe he wouldn't be as effective.
Yeah, how crazy is that? I mean, when the Diamondbacks did go out and sign him to that deal, there was some criticism or speculation that, you know, wow, Randy Johnson, I mean, yeah, he's great, but he's getting up there in age, and is this really what a expansion team should be doing, you know, signing a guy like this? And Jerry Colangelo was committed to the fact that he thought that this team could win, and that they needed to take a gigantic step forward in order to keep selling tickets. So, you know, he went out and what we say on a limb for a 4-year, $52 million contract, which was pretty big at that point. And Johnson was 35, as you said. And all he did over those 4 years was win, you know, 4 straight National League Cy Young Awards, a World Series title, and, you know, an MVP, co-MVP award in that World Series. So that was, you know, one of the easier assignments when they asked for what the best free agent signing by the organization you cover was. And I tell you what was a little challenging was trying to come up with, like, you know, what would be number two as far as free agents go. And, you know, I didn't really realize that Steve Finley, you know, you go back and you look at, you know, a 4-year, $21.5 million contract that he signed right around the same time. You know, he put up some very good numbers over those 4 years that kind of made that deal worthwhile for the Diamondbacks.
What about Gonzo? Was he a... He was a free agent signing, wasn't he?
No, he was a trade.
No.
They got him from the Tigers for Kareem Garcia, which if you had to go back and look at what maybe one of the best trades in Diamondbacks history would be, that would be right up there too. You know, in before the 1999 season, getting him, that was a huge, obviously it turned out to be a great deal. Joe Garagiola Jr. Gets the credit for that one.
Wow, very interesting. Yeah, I mean, Gonzo had a great career with the Diamondbacks, but he could have just whittled it down to one single hit, and he'd still be considered having a great career with the Diamondbacks. That was really fun to watch that World Series. Okay, wow, Steve, look at all the time we filled up. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
I know so much. I'm surprised we're able to get to it all, but that's great, Al.
Thank you very much for all of your contributions. Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Pitchers and catchers are reporting to spring training really any day now. So now it's just time to look at the teams and see what they have going into camp opening up. Very exciting time for everyone, including the San Diego Padres. Talk to AJ Casavell about that. I'm Allison Sutter. AJ, I was looking at your inbox, and fans have been asking for quite a while, what is the 5-man rotation going to be? You've been hesitant because the rotation's been so in flux, and they were looking to make moves. You feel a little bit more confident to at least give your general ideas on that. So what would you say would be like a likely 5-man rotation, keeping in mind, of course, that spring training hasn't even started yet?
Yeah, obviously there's a lot that could still happen between now and the start of the season. But I think with the Trevor Cahill signing last week, I think that kind of makes it – I've been getting some version of who's going to be in the rotation, what's the rotation going to be pretty much every week since the start of the offseason. And now I feel finally somewhat confident in saying, all right, there's a tier that's kind of established itself, and there's a way to actually break it down. I would say Clayton Richard and Jolys Chacin have probably the best chance, given that the Padres committed some money to them in free agency and essentially brought them back as starters. And I'll start out by saying that no one in the rotation really has a spot locked up. And if anyone could win a spot, anyone could end up in the bullpen or in AAA. So Richard and Chacin are probably the two most likely. Luis Perdomo's in that mix, too, with what he did in the second half of last season. I think it's hard to envision a scenario in which he starts in AAA. And then we kind of start getting into the tier of pitchers who could either end up in the bullpen or end up starting the season in AAA. In that tier, I think right on the brink at the top of it is Christian Friedrich, who led the team in starts last season. He had kind of an up and down season, but he was he ended up as one of their more reliable starters, at least in the sense of he went out there and every game gave at least 5 or 6 innings that were solid. So he's kind of maybe in that fourth starter role. And then after that, there's 5 guys for one spot. They signed Trevor Cahill. He spent last season as a reliever. The Padres think there's still some left in the tank for him as a starter, so they'll give him that chance. If he doesn't make the rotation, he'll end up in the bullpen. Paul Clemens is an interesting guy. He was pretty good in September, but his numbers were not great before that, obviously. Jared Cozart's in that mix. Cesar Vargas, if his elbow is okay, and it seems to be, he's been pitching in Mexico, but mostly in relief, so we'll need to see him work deeper into games. But he's in that mix also, and I would say Tyrell Jenkins is something of a long shot. So that's really the rotation mix. If I had to guess, I'd give that 5th spot to Cahill, at least to start the season. And it's really the first time I feel confident in actually assigning, here's what the rotation might be.
Andy Green, I'm sure, is pretty happy that it's at least taking shape a little bit. Now, there is room, of course, like you say. I mean, nothing's really locked up, which means that there's not, like, you know, some ace. And it's not like the Padres have a surefire number one, number two, number three. But there's some interesting names that are still out there. And you mentioned Doug Pfister, Jeff Weaver, and Jake Peavy are all, like, really solid free agents that are still flailing out there. Is there any chance that maybe the Padres, do you find that interesting that they're still out there, and do you think there's a chance that the Padres might sign any of these guys?
The Padres, I know, have shown interest, some interest in all three of those guys. They're
Jared Weaver, by the way, not Jeff. Jared Weaver. Go ahead.
Oh, did you say Jeff? I didn't even know.
I do that all
the time.
Yeah.
I don't think the Padres are interested in Jeff Weaver. But
no.
But Jared Weaver, Doug Fister, and Jake Peavy, they've shown some interest in some way in all three of those guys. I think as it stands right now, the Padres are maybe mulling whether signing one of them would maybe take away some chances for a young guy to get some experience at the major league level. They wouldn't be opposed to signing any of them. I think one of the interesting things is last year Christian Friedrich ended up making the most starts of any Padres pitcher, and they didn't sign him until March 2nd. So this isn't something that's to say the Padres are going to enter camp on February 14th with these pitchers, and those are going to be their pitchers all season. Some of these guys might not be signed by them, but it is interesting that none of them have been scooped up yet. The Padres are very interested in with some of these young arms that they have, they're very interested in bringing in that kind of veteran presence. Obviously, Jake Peavy here is a bit of a fan favorite, and he's obviously known for being a great clubhouse guy in San Diego in the past. They would be interested in bringing in a veteran presence to kind of show these young pitchers the ropes, but they already kind of have that in Clayton Richard. Trevor Cahill's been around the block too, so the Padres are really weighing. They have nine guys that they feel are capable of starting in the major leagues, at least going into camp. They're kind of weighing whether any of the more veteran options would take away a chance from a young guy, or whether it's worth it to maybe bring in those veterans and kind of show the young guys the rope. So it's an interesting decision they'll have to make in the next couple weeks.
Which I guess kind of answers the question, I mean, are there any more moves coming? When it comes to the Padres, anything could happen, but it would seem that they would be kind of minor things that would happen if they don't end up picking up one of these pitchers. They've done some work this offseason, so it would be a little bit surprising if anything happened between now and spring training, would it not?
I wouldn't say surprising, given just that AJ Preller is prone to make any trade at any given time. But there,
right.
I would say in the rotation, it's almost a toss up whether they'll add someone. Where you might see the Padres make an actual trade, they're not going to bring in a pitcher via a trade by any means.
Right.
If they do so, there would be a free agent signing. Where they might make a trade would be for a shortstop to compete with Luis Sardinas. I think they kind of view that situation as that's not something we have to get done in the offseason necessarily. That's not something that we have to get done before pitchers and catchers report. They're going to be looking at that into March potentially, and they're not going to cave on a deal because they're desperate for a shortstop. They're going to make sure that they're not in massive need of the shortstop because they feel that Luis Sardinas could be a major league starter. They want to get some competition for him in there. But I think you look at the A's signed Adam Rosales, and I had some questions as to why the Padres didn't bring back Adam Rosales. Well, it's because the Padres want someone who can compete to be a starting shortstop with Luis Sardinas. I think that could be interesting in terms of what further moves they make before opening day. I would expect them to keep exploring a number of trade options for a potential starting shortstop, maybe a younger guy.
So looking over the whole team as a whole, understanding that it's still moving parts and that they still have to put together the team, which they have plenty of time to do before opening day, but what area would you say would be a strength of the Padres going into spring training?
It's an interesting question. I think for me there's a couple answers. One of them seems obvious on the surface. It would be the bullpen. I think the bullpen could be a strength entering the season, but the bullpen on any team is obviously the most volatile from year to year. If Carter Capps is healthy, as the Padres say he is, he should be ready by opening day, and that gives them a back end of the bullpen with Brad Hand, Ryan Buchter, Carter Capps, and Brandon Maurer, all of whom were very good last season. Maurer had his struggles earlier in the year, but Buchter and Hand were very good for the Padres last season. So I think they view the back end of their bullpen as solid, and they have some depth there. But like I said, bullpens are volatile. I think the other strength the Padres have, and this one really isn't in dispute, is their outfield defense. Travis Jankowski, if he plays every day, he's a Gold Glove candidate. The problem with that is he's competing for the center field job with Manny Margot, who could very well be the best defensive prospect in baseball. So if the two of them are playing the outfield, Andy Green joked at the winter meetings that, hey, maybe we'll just go with two outfielders and play five infielders because they have enough range to cover all the ground out there. Hunter Renfro's he has what it takes to be an above-average defender. I think in his brief time in the major league, he didn't show that last year. But he's probably an above-average defender with one of the better arms in baseball. And then Alex Dickerson showed some serious improvement in left field. So their outfield defense, it's going to be fun to watch next season, especially when Jankowski and Margot are in the field at the same time.
Okay, good stuff. AJ, thank you so much. Catch up with you next week.
All right, thanks for having me on.
The Rockies are getting ready to go to spring training, and they have made quite a splashy free agent signing, it appears to be, on its face. So let's talk to Thomas Harding about that. I'm Allison Sutter. Thomas, okay, so they have signed Greg Holland, which comes with a lot of upside and a lot of risk at the same time. So tell us about the deal and your reaction to this.
Yeah, it's a reported one-year deal with a vesting option for a second year. Now, the physical will be a big thing with him because he's coming off missing last season because of Tommy John surgery, but he did throw for baseball executives at the general managers meetings in November in Arizona. And while the velocity wasn't up, he looked healthy, and that's real important. The Rockies really don't have that solid, long-time major league closer, although Adam Ottavino has done it in some small snippets, and so has and so has Jake McGee. But with Greg Holland, he was, in a lot of people's eyes, the best closer in the game in 2013 and 2014. And also, he was a big part of the Royals in 2015, even though he was pitching through an injury that required surgery. So we're talking about a huge move for a team that believes that it can be in it. And suddenly, when you have that piece added to the puzzle, and it doesn't cost you guys in your system, it doesn't cost you top prospects, it just costs you money, there's reason to believe that they're justified in thinking so.
Yeah, I mean, this is let's say that the best case scenario happens, and that is that Greg Holland is the Greg Holland from a couple of years ago. I mean, let's look at the bullpen as a whole. What does this do for the bullpen? What does this do? Not only how much stronger does the bullpen get, but then what kind of effect does that have on the Rockies as a whole? What can this do for them?
Well, the first thing it does is it gives a lot of confidence that they can hold a lead late. And if you look at it, they had the highest ERA in baseball last year, but Jake McGee was battling injury. Adam Ottavino was coming back from a Tommy John surgery, and he came back in the middle of a season as opposed to really having some time to stretch things out. It may have come back a little bit early. Then you've got some hard throwers like Carlos Estevez, who was forced into the closer's role last year and actually did a pretty good job for a stretch until his inexperience got to him. So if you move all those guys earlier in the game and you're able to match up and you add a Mike Dunn to it, who's left-handed, you've got Dunn and McGee from the left, you've got Ottavino and Estevez from the right, Ottavino with that slider, Estevez who can throw at 100 miles an hour. Suddenly you've got a bunch of power arms late in the games, and this goes back to when Jeff Breidich, even before Jeff Breidich took over as general manager, when Walt Weiss was the manager, one of the first things he asked for was to try to build a bunch of power arms late in the game. And now Bud Black has all those guys to work with, and you saw what he did in San Diego with the bullpen that he had there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I know you're on a caravan, so we're not going to keep you much longer. So we're just going to kind of go over the news. So that's pretty much the news. So tell us what's going on with the caravan. Are fans getting excited? What's the vibe out there?
I tell you, the vibe is they're pretty excited. And today, David Dahl and Tom Murphy, the young catcher, they were in Fort Collins, Colorado, along with Estevez and Gerardo Parra. And I was in Colorado Springs yesterday when Walters and Parra and Estevez were down there, and there'll be a few more stops. I think there'll be one in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Grand Junction, Colorado, and finally one at Coors Field for season ticket holders on Saturday. And also there are a lot of baseball events going on over the weekend. I know I'm at a Society for American Baseball Research thing on Saturday where there are a number of them across the United States. And at the end of those, all of us baseball people that maybe don't get to pick up a baseball, we go outside and play a game of catch. So that adds a little bit of fun to it.
That's pretty awesome. Okay, Thomas, get back to it. Thank you for your time. We'll catch up with you next time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
The Dodgers seem to have answered their second base question, and it might be an answer that we weren't exactly expecting. Let's talk to Ken Gernick about that. I'm Allison Sutter. Ken, so we've been speculating on what the Dodgers are going to do about second base all offseason, and they made a deal for Logan Forsythe. So can you tell us the details about that and Just kind of your thoughts on the fact that the Dozier thing seems to be off now, and just what went into the Dodgers' thinking on Forsythe.
He was their second choice all along. Mm-hmm. They obviously preferred Dozier, 42 home runs, but they didn't prefer giving up two prospects for him. They were holding out, hoping that Minnesota would cave, and Minnesota was holding out that the Dodgers would cave, and eventually the Dodgers pivoted and went to their backup pick, which is Forsythe. They have a lot of familiarity with him because Andrew Friedman had traded for him with Tampa, and Dave Roberts had coached him when they were both in San Diego, so they know the kind of player he is. Dave Roberts said he has kind of the right DNA to be the guy to take over for Chase Utley. He's kind of a similar grinder type, good in the clubhouse, plays every day. He's a right-handed bat, which they needed. He's younger, obviously, than Chase Utley. He probably will bat leadoff and can play against righties and lefties. His splits are almost identical. So he's a real solid second choice, maybe not as good a player as Dozier, but obviously he came cheaper as far as what they had to give up for him. And he fills three holes in being a right-handed hitting second baseman who can bat at the top of the order.
Yeah, 264 batting average last year, 778 OPS, 20 home runs. Certainly, yeah, a very solid player. So it's just a straight-up trade for Jose De Leon. So that seems to be not too painful, even though losing De Leon, I'm sure. I guess it's probably a little bit easier for them to swallow because they kind of knew that whatever they were going to do, they were going to lose. He was most likely going to be included, correct?
Well, between those two players, sure. Could have signed a free agent earlier on. But, yeah, right. For those two players, they were going to have to give up somebody. They have starting pitching depth, and they have outfield depth. So they traded from their starting pitching depth. They have veterans. They're deep in veterans, and they're also deep in prospects. And this was the one that they decided that they would be willing to give up. You know, as I said, they have they have Kazmir and McCarthy and Ryu and Wood to battle for the fifth spot, along with some young pitchers like Ross Stripling and Brock Stewart. I mean, they have plenty of arms to slide in behind Kershaw, Hill, Maeda, and Urias. So, you know, you're talking about really like 10 different pitchers that they feel can be starters on their team. So, you know, it's not that De Leon wasn't good, and it's not that he was expendable, but if they had to trade from a position of depth, starting pitching was it.
I noticed in reading your coverage that you did mention that possibly they could be interested in Chase Utley as a bench player. So I guess the door hasn't completely closed on that. It's still so much that he can bring to a team. So I guess we should still keep our eye on that to see maybe if they make a move there.
Well, there's going to be a numbers crunch, really, because especially with all these outfielders, unless they make a trade. You know, they need a relief pitcher, a middle innings relief pitcher, and they could always make a trade and alleviate some of the problem. But they right now they have too many outfielders, and they sure don't have room for Chase Utley, it wouldn't seem, at this point. So, you know, something would have to change. But on the other hand, Andrew Friedman said if Chase Utley had hit right-handed, he probably would have been re-signed already. So, they obviously like him, but for balance, they needed a right-handed hitter to put in this predominantly left-handed lineup.
Yeah, this is turning out to be quite an impressive Dodgers roster, really going into spring training. Things seem to be coming together well for them. There was one minor deal that I just wanted to touch on. They acquired Brett Eibner, who was designated for assignment by the A's last Friday. So not really impressive numbers, you know, terribly impressive, but sort of reinforcement, I guess. What was their interest in him? Where did that come from?
Yeah, he's probably minor league insurance, especially in case Trace Thompson's back doesn't heal up. They're kind of similar right-handed power hitters, big. You know, the Dodgers also have Scott Van Slyke, so they don't have a shortage of that type of player. But they are looking for more right-handed bats because of the struggles they've had against left-handers. But with he's about eighth or ninth on the outfield depth chart, so I don't imagine that he's going to be on the opening day roster, although you never know. But, you know, the Dodgers have, you know, Puig and Ethier and Toles and Van Slyke and Thompson, Jock Peterson in center field. I mean, they don't need more outfielders, at least not on the major league level, if everybody's healthy.
So this is the time of year where there's optimism all around when teams report to spring training. Everybody seems to think that they have a chance. Of course, there are teams that know they don't. But I also like that players are just refreshed and they feel ready to go. You caught up with Puig recently. We have to touch on Puig, right? We can't go a podcast and not talk about him. But you said he's a trimmer, Yasiel Puig, and seems to be in a good mindset. So he seems to have now adopted some of the conditioning habits that maybe his trainers have been wanting him to do. And so that's probably a little positive to see him just going that route.
Yeah, you know, and I would imagine that, you know, being sent to the minor leagues and then coming back as a platoon player, you know, that's a wake-up call, or it should be, and it seems like it is. He said he has a cook who prepares his meals for him now, and the team asked him to kind of slim down a little bit. Dave Roberts felt that his mass is not fat, but his muscle mass had really kind of gotten away of his swing and his mechanics. So they're hopeful that he shows up a different type player, not only visually, but in the way he performs, that he can somehow regain that electric bat that he had in his first 2 years. And as Dave Roberts said today, you know, if they can get 600 at-bats out of Yasiel Puig, it means he's playing well, and it means that the Dodgers are a better team. He said pretty much the same thing about Jock Peterson. He would prefer that they don't be platoon players, you know, and can't play against, in Puig's case, right-handed pitching, and in Peterson's case, left-handed pitching. But they're going to have to show it on the field in spring training to earn those opportunities.
Absolutely. Should be an interesting one. Okay, Ken, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Allison.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.